TFM.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, you know, we just recorded an episode of Warp 5 before this, and we were both wearing our NX hats. I'm glad you took yours off here so I can see that really fantastic hairdo you've got going today.
Well, Chris, you know, this just felt like it should be the hair episode. Those great 80s metal hair bands, you know, so that's kind of what I was going with today.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm going to nominate you for a podcasting award this year for most outstanding hairstyling. So get set. Yeah, today, everyone, we're going to talk about the episode Armageddon Game, which actually was nominated for Outstanding Achievement in Hairstyling in the Emmy Awards, because the aliens we meet in this episode, I just have a feeling that on their homeworlds, there are a lot of hair salons, just like in the town where I live.
I think you're absolutely right, Chris.
Here's a quick rundown of this episode before we jump into the discussion. Following centuries of war, a race called the Kellerans, and another, apparently named after Vulcans, the Talani, enlist the help of Dr. Bashir and Chief O'Brien to destroy the remaining stockpile of weapons. Of course, the Starfleet officers are successful. I mean, how could they not be with Bashir's genetically enhanced mind and Miles's everyman know-how? But things turn dark when the two former enemies team up to kill everyone with any knowledge of how the weapons worked, including Miles and Jules. Matthew, we were talking about what should we discuss on The Orb, and you mentioned that you watched this episode recently, so why don't we chat about it? We both love the Miles and Jules relationship, so what's your first impression? It really connects you with this episode.
Yeah, I think that was actually the thing that really connected me in the rewatch of this episode, was the fact that this is planting so many seeds for where they're going to go with Julian and Miles. And, you know, I think it makes sense. And I think one of my favorite parts about it is how Miles discounts what Julian says about them going through the fire and, you know, mm-hmm. that having an impact. But I think it absolutely does have a huge impact on them. And, you know, from this point onward, these two characters are just going to move closer and closer in their friendship. And I think part of that, too, is that this episode allowed O'Brien to see that Bashir is not unflappable, that mm-hmm. he is not just this kind of arrogant person that nothing gets to. You know, the fact that we learn that Julian had given up a great love to pursue Starfleet and, of course, be out here on the frontier of medicine, he's giving up quite a lot. And I think, you know, it does kind of help explain maybe why he's been so intent on finding another relationship, because he is, I think, making up for something that he lost, right? And he's trying to replace it in that sense. So there's just so much depth here to their relationship. And then, of course, on top of that, we learn, you know, unfortunately for Miles, that his relationship with Keiko is not always the easiest, you know, and that their marriage is sometimes difficult, obviously worth it. But in what we've talked about many times in the Orb, there is this realism to their relationship in that marriage is not just hunky-dory all the time.
Yeah, definitely not. It is interesting that they, you have Bashir you're talking about, who gave up this love and he's looking for something else. And Miles, who has this love, who has this marriage. And like you just said there, there's a realism to Miles's relationship with Keiko. And maybe Bashir having this ideal vision of what it would be like if he had someone again. So it's another bonding moment, contrasting their situations, bringing them together in this episode. We'll talk a little bit more about Keiko in a little bit as we get into the story and the resolution of it. But talking about planting the seeds of this friendship between O'Brien and Bashir, you've been doing a bit of a rewatch, so what comes before this may be a little bit fresher in your mind than it is in mine. Do you feel, for you, is this the moment where that friendship really takes shape and solidifies and then we move forward from here? Or is there something before this that first comes to mind for you and then this is building on it?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, in the first season, we have the storyteller, which starts that. We have Rivals, which has
Rivals is the one that pops in my mind first, usually. Yeah.
So, I mean, this has been kind of a continuous story, I feel like, even from, you know, the first season, the second season, and, you know, and the third season, you really start to, I think, smooth things out with their relationship. And they start, you know, I think Miles basically begrudgingly just gives in to realize that he does like this guy, that there's much more to him than he thought. And I think that's something that's really cool that they continue to pursue this relationship. And it's one of those things that Deep Space Nine does such a good job of recognizing the actors' relationships on screen and the ones that have really good chemistry so that they then write towards those. You know, obviously, Terry Farrell and Michael Dorn had fantastic chemistry. And so they decide, well, we'll just continue this and we'll put, you know, Worf and Jadzia together. And that's exactly what happens with Miles and Julian. Those two actors have great chemistry together and great back and forth, so that by the time we end the show, I mean, they're the best couple of the show in many ways, right? But what also is beautiful is it's this, you know, we've said this before, it's a wonderful representation of good male friendship, which is very important to all men's lives, to have very good male friends that are by their side no matter what. And that's where these guys are going to get to. And this episode is just so much fun because we start to put that chink in the armor, especially for O'Brien, that he realizes that Bashir is much more than meets the eye. And maybe this guy is actually not as bad as he thought he was.
Right. And in that sense, maybe Miles is channeling the audience and perhaps the writers, in that Bashir starts out one way, then there's this one vision for the character, the role the character is supposed to play on the show, and that has been evolving. And I think Bashir, you know, bit by bit by bit, is becoming a more interesting character. And Miles, because he was already an established character, perhaps felt a lot more settled from the beginning. But, you know, if you fast forward to late in the series, seasons 5, 6, 7, and you think about who Bashir is as a character compared with these early seasons, it's just an astonishing transformation. And I don't think that's all due to the fact that they retcon his character as being genetically enhanced. I think it's just, he becomes more well-rounded. And I do think a lot of that goes along with this friendship and is thanks to what he learns through his friendship with Miles.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
So I said we'll talk about Keiko a little bit more. And fans, they love to dump on Keiko. They complain about her. They don't like the character. They don't like the portrayal. They say she whines and complains. She doesn't have anything to do on the show that's integral to the storyline. You know, I tend to disagree with all of these points. I don't really know what people are expecting from the character. I think that she and Miles have a real marriage. It's possibly, I don't want to say for sure, I have to really think about it, but it's certainly among a tiny, tiny handful of realistic relationships and marriages that we see in Star Trek in general. You know, I think maybe Tom and B'Elanna come close, although their relationship is different than what happened with Miles and Keiko. But I think that this episode does a nice job of portraying that realism in their relationship. And it ultimately saves Miles's life that Keiko knows him so well, or at least thinks that she knows him so well, because in the end, it turns out that she was wrong about when he drinks coffee. But the fact that she had that thought in the first place is crucial, because if she had not, Sisko was ready to give up. Sisko was like, tell Starfleet that we need a new chief of operations. We need a new chief medical officer. And maybe that's something we should talk about as well. That's not on our outline, how Sisko viewed this. But before we get to that, sticking with this marriage here and sticking with Sisko, one thing that stands out is that Sisko accepts that Keiko must know her husband. He doesn't question her. He listens to her. He follows that trail, and it ultimately works out. So anyway, that's a long setup, but what are your thoughts on their relationship and also its role in the story?
Yeah, I think this is one of the best moments that they get for the season. I think it does really show that they have a great and loving relationship, that they care so much about each other, and that it's one of those things where, you know, Miles probably did do this, where, you know, she had never seen him drink coffee before, and it's one of those things that have kind of just changed over time. And that's kind of the beauty of it, is, you know, those little things that change about your spouse over time, things they didn't used to do, they do, and things they, you know, vice versa. So I think that it really, really works. And I think the other reason, when she comes to Sisko and says this, I think it gives him the impetus to believe what he wants to believe, that they're not dead, right? And of course, you know, then they start looking into everything and they realize, yes, things have been doctored, right? This isn't correct. And then they look in for, and so it leads us to a whole other thematic element this episode, which is so much more rich now than it used to be. But I think this is fantastic when it comes to just what it says about these two characters and their marriage. And it is a wonderfully fun moment at the very end, of course, when he's saying, but no, I do drink coffee. And she's like, what? You know, it is, those are the fun, like, joyful moments that you get in your marriage as you begin to learn each other more. And that continues to happen throughout all the years you're married, because you're continually changing and evolving together, hopefully. And so, yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah. And he said, oh, and don't you remember that late night coffee we had in Rascals?
Yeah.
It's one of those moments where the writers kind of contradict something that did happen before. But, you know, hey, it's can be stressful. Rascals was stressful. You know, Keiko had been turned into a kid and needed a caffeine boost.
Exactly.
At the end of that. But so I mentioned Sisko, though, when we were talking this. I hadn't thought about it before, but I kind of thought about it when I was watching. I didn't put it on the outline. Were you surprised how easily Sisko just accepted that two of his senior officers were killed?
I think, yeah, a little bit. You know, it's interesting, because, you know, you had put on this the outline, the idea of media manipulation. But I do think that mm-hmm. one of the themes that goes with that, it's a part of it, is just the acceptance of things at face value, you know. And mm-hmm. Here, I think, have these aliens done anything that would warrant not believing them? I don't know. But it does seem like you would do a much more thorough investigation into the death of two officers.
Right.
Like this. And so I do feel like this is almost something that is very poignant for today, which is that something isn't true until all the facts come out. Mm-hmm. And to make sure that you have all the facts before mm-hmm. you make a judgment call. And I do feel like, yeah, they jump to the conclusion that they have all the facts before they actually realize that they don't have all the facts.
Yeah. And they don't really have many facts. They have an explanation given to them by these aliens, and they have this video. And I just found it odd that Sisko jumped so quickly to accept this, because I think later Sisko would not do that. If this happened third, fourth, fifth season onward, it's hard for me to see Sisko just giving up on it so easily. And I don't know if that's like an evolution of the character, or if that's Morgan Gendel writing characters that he's not as familiar with, and so we get a characterization of Sisko that's a bit out of line with what we expect from Sisko. I know the script for this story, even the whole idea for this story, changed quite a bit over its development, and so that might have something to do with it, but it just struck me as odd, and I really would have expected Sisko to investigate more and be unwilling to let go of Bashir and O'Brien mm-hmm. and fight to the end to find out yeah. what really, really happened here. And he doesn't do that until Keiko triggers him to think more deeply about what's going on.
And I think I do take that a little bit as like, this is a learning moment for Sisko. You know, you mm-hmm. realize that he is a character and a person where he's still learning what it means to be in command.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
So I
yeah.
do think that that is part of this. And so mm-hmm. I don't hold him, you know, it doesn't seem too off, because this, I think, will propel him in the future to be much more hard-nosed on things and much more questioning than he is here because of this experience, and kind of a little less trusting of people mm-hmm. when they come and say something to him, you know. So, which is it's a good thing, that the idea of you want to make sure you verify everything before you yeah. just readily accept things.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I don't know if trust is the word I would use, like less trusting. I think it's true, but for me, it's more, he becomes more skeptical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
he wants more facts, more investigation before making a decision in the future. And maybe, yeah, as you say, as a result of this incident. You mentioned media manipulation being on our outline. And the reason I put that there is that at the time that this episode was written and produced, I don't think that this was such a concern. I think the technology was still mm-hmm. far enough off, especially being something that kind of anybody could do, that it wasn't something that we were highly concerned about. But in today's world, it's very easy to take video and manipulate yep. the video. You can even make people say things they don't even say. You can control the lips. You can control the voice. You can completely fabricate mm-hmm. videos these days. And it's a little bit different than making two people vanish suddenly. But actually, I think that what happened here is easier to do than what we can do today. Just making two people vanish. I mean, any Hollywood CGI artist could do that. And then an explanation of, oh yeah, there's this security weapon that just instantly disintegrates somebody so that it looks like they vanish. It's a very, very easy explanation for a manipulation that would not be difficult to do. And what we can do in today's world is much more sophisticated and I think much more dangerous. And as you were saying, it highlights why. A message of this episode, if you watch it in 2022, is don't believe everything you see.
Yeah.
You have to be skeptical. You have to find out what's really happening because people will manipulate you, just like what is being done here to Cisco. And that was just a point. I just wanted to mention it, that we talk about how Deep Space Nine is perhaps the most timeless of the Star Trek series. I feel like the themes that are covered, they, of course, were meaningful in their own time.
Right.
But as the decades go by, some of them become even more meaningful. And I think this is a case of one of those.
Yeah, I mean, you know, absolutely. I think the idea of verifying information from multiple sources, from, you know, and where you're getting your information from and all that kind of stuff really plays into that. And of course, like you said, you know, just what we can do with technology is actually really insane. You know, they did not release this to everyone because of its danger, but there is a version of Adobe Audition that can actually create people saying things that they didn't say. I mean, and they use a version of this on The Mandalorian when they have certain characters show up and they're trying to mimic their voices from the past. They take all these different things, you know. So you actually see this playing out in shows and stuff. And so, but things are getting to the point where it could be so good. You have to, because you could literally make anybody say anything and make it look as real as possible. So yeah, there's a lot of thought processes into how do we make sure that if we don't want to fall into the trap of just fooling ourselves, that we plant markers in things so we know when things are created and when they are real.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well,
it's terrifying.
I just want to confirm, young Mark Hamill never made dozens of frogs float in the air.
That's true.
That's not real.
Yep.
So,
nope.
But yeah, I mean, I was just hearing people talk yesterday about that Adobe Audition feature and the risk of it, separate from, you know, preparing for this episode. So, yeah, that stuff is out there. Okay. Well, let's returning to the story. I mentioned that the script and the concept of the story changed a lot over time. And I wanted to ask you what you think about the original story compared to what we got and whether it would have changed some of the points of the story. Originally, Jadzia would have been there with Dr. Bashir instead of Miles. Also, it was going to end up being like a chase movie. That was the original idea. And, well, that wasn't the original idea. The original idea that Morgan Gandell had was sending Jadzia on this thing. But then he was encouraged by Michael Piller to make it a grand chase. And he came up with this idea of having a lot of locations and ships and all kinds of stuff, which probably would have been cool, but super expensive for them to produce. And so they had to scale it back. And then we ended up getting, it's not a bottle show, but it, you know, it is limited locations. And it's a much more contained story. And I guess in the sense of the chase is Miles and Jules getting away and then Cisco also trying to find them changed a bit. It's a lot less ground than what it would have been. Starting with Jadzia, though, we've just talked about what the story means to us. The foundation of the O'Brien-Bashir relationship. How would you have felt if it had been Jadzia? How do you see this story working?
Well, I think obviously that plays into then their relationship together, you know, and how that might have progressed. And maybe that would have progressed in a completely different way because of their experience here.
Is that something you would have wanted to see? Because as I understand it, there was a feeling that maybe they had done this Jadzia Julian thing a little bit too much and wanted to move away from that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to divorce myself at this point from everything we do know. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, we know from the future, you know, she will tell Julian that if it hadn't been for Worf, it would have been him. Mm-hmm. So there is this. And so I think that might have actually been an interesting thing to see. You know, maybe they would have progressed this in a more adult manner. Mm-hmm. I think that would have been interesting. And it could have been really a fun and interesting story to have with them. You know, just the idea of kind of going on this basically North by Northwest type of chase film. Mm-hmm. That is fascinating and fun. And I would love to see any Star Trek episode kind of do that, because I think it's one of my favorite movies from Alfred Hitchcock. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know that. I mean, for this era of television, I don't think that's going to be possible, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it could have been a more exciting episode in its original concept. I think that the depth of the relationship building between Miles and Jules would have been weakened a lot in that. Well, if Jadzia had gone, it would have been different. But once the decision was made to send Miles, that relationship building that we got, I think, would have been weakened if the focus of the story was more of a chase movie. I sometimes feel like this episode, it's an interesting episode, but it feels like it could have been a lot more. Even without knowing that background, that there was another concept to it, I still, when I watch it, feel like this could have been more. And I don't know how to put that into words and explain exactly, but you, sometimes when you watch a story and you feel like it has potential, like mm-hmm. unrealized potential to it.
Well, I think one of the things that's really interesting here is how far these races are willing to go to try and keep themselves safe. And I think that is a really interesting question. And where I think maybe the episode could have been better is to give more background as to the why and how all of this came to be, other than mm-hmm. just thinking it was because of the hair wars. And when doing that, I think what it would have added is this sense of, you know, why they're willing to go this far. I mean, they're willing to kill completely innocent people that have absolutely nothing to do with this, just because they don't ever want anybody to have access to this technology. And but I mean, like, in all reality, how much access are you going to have to people who live across the sector, you know? And
right.
Other than knowing that future Julian is going to become genetically enhanced, which we don't know yet, like, how would he and O'Brien even remember all of the stuff anyway to make these things? It's not like they're downloading the schematics and taking him home, you know? So I just think a little bit more on that would have been great, because it is a really interesting question as to how far you're willing to go to keep yourself and your people safe. And that's an interesting question that I think just doesn't have enough weight to it with what we get in the story.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, there are some dishes that I cook regularly, and I still refer to the recipe each time to make sure.
Yeah, so exactly.
I wouldn't be able to remember how to recreate these biomechanical gene disruptors myself. So I'm not genetically enhanced, of course, but still, I don't think this is going to be top of mind.
Exactly.
For Bashir or for Miles. Yeah, that is a weak point of the story, where I think the point is that as long as knowledge that is dangerous still exists, there's a chance that it will be manipulated again and history will repeat itself. That's the point of the message. But like you say, in the context of the story, it's not really a threat for these races, because they've already killed all of themselves who have this knowledge, mm-hmm. and two people from the Federation who are leaving, officers of an organization that, you know, has a reputation for not delving into developing weapons like this in the first place. It's probably a very, very, very minor threat. You can't say that there's no risk at all. It's not zero, but is it worth starting a war with the Federation over? I think that that doesn't work in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And but the other point too is I think the idea that let's kill everyone who has knowledge of this particular thing that frightens us is a dangerous message.
Oh yeah.
In itself. You think about anything here on Earth, you take something obvious like the atomic bomb. If you had rounded up everybody in the world who had any knowledge of how to make an atomic bomb and you executed them all, there are people who were involved in that for various reasons. There are people who were involved in capacities that would not allow them to actually recreate that. And then also there are other elements such as atomic energy, not related to destruction. I just think it's a dangerous mindset and a little bit surprising. Well, not surprising to see it here. If the message of the story is to tell us that this is dangerous,
right.
But the way it's portrayed in the story, I think is that message is weak and a bit muddy.
Well, I think that the thing about this episode and where it would be even more poignant today is that message of the idea that we mm-hmm. would just destroy anything that we find or think is dangerous, and to just destroy some kind of knowledge or, you know, I mean, gosh, we could go to speech or, you know, when you begin right. to think about where you could play this message and how it is really impactful and important, all of that stuff starts to come to your mind. And I think that's, again, a little bit more focus on that in the story would have been really helpful because mm-hmm. it gives more weight than to what's being done. And it creates that question, is it okay to destroy knowledge of things and or people to destroy a certain type of knowledge if we're promising never to use that knowledge again because we've learned our lesson? Like, shouldn't we trust ourselves then to, you know, so and obviously they don't trust themselves enough to have learned that lesson. And I think that's kind of a terrifying thing to say, oh yeah, we don't have enough faith that we can not do this again. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, well, they fought a war for centuries and they never learned. So I guess, yeah, they don't have faith in themselves to be able to change. It's the last point I'll make about it is that, and this isn't covered in the episode, so I have no idea, but it's entirely possible that there were scientists in that room who had knowledge of how these weapons were made, and that knowledge might be needed 20 years later to develop a cure for a disease. But they've killed the people who had that knowledge, and therefore when that disease comes, they're not able to deal with it. You know, those are the types of things that you're taking a short-sighted look at your own future.
Right, and where that, you know, who knows how that research and or quote-unquote weapon could be beneficial in the future. You never know what's going to come. And
right.
So many times things that are ridiculously bad can be turned into something good with a different perspective.
Absolutely. All right. Well, any final thoughts on Armageddon Game and what rating would you give this episode?
Yeah, you know, I mean, for me, I just, I ended up liking this episode more than I remembered. And I think it has to do with the fact that, you know, for all of the things we talked about that we wish it kind of did better, it really comes down to the fact that they're focusing on the characters. And sometimes that makes up for, you know, a multitude of story sins. And because these two characters become some of my favorite characters on the show, it is really enjoyable. And so I find it more rewatchable because of that too, right? So I like that as well. And, you know, I'd probably give this like a 3.5 out of 5. You know, it's just it's above average, but it's not going to go into the upper echelons of like Deep Space Nine episodes. And so, but yeah, I was just kind of in this really slow rewatch I've been doing. I just watch an episode every once in a while. It was one to come across and you're like, oh, this is pretty good, you know, which is always fun when you're doing that and an episode kind of surprises you in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My final thoughts on it are that structurally, it feels a lot like a TNG episode, but where it breaks out of that is in the character development. And so that's where I appreciate them building this relationship with Miles and Jules, and also shedding light in a realistic way on the marriage of Miles and Keiko. But the mystery itself is something we've seen before. It feels a lot like a TNG story, and the resolution to it also feels a lot like a TNG story. So it's an episode where I feel like you can see Deep Space Nine still finding its way and getting its legs underneath it, but making progress and giving us, at least in the Bashir O'Brien element, a really important foundation that's necessary for the series to grow into what it becomes. And it's one of those things, I feel like season two in general is like that. Like, you really feel like the scale is rocking a little bit between, we're still used to doing TNG style stories, but we want to do this other stuff. And this one, you kind of feel that within the same episode, rocking back and forth a little bit. But overall, yeah, it's an enjoyable episode, and I'm going to give it 6 cases of hairspray. All right, everyone. Well, we would love to hear your thoughts on Armageddon Game or the Miles-Jules relationship or even Miles' marriage to Keiko. If you'd like to share your thoughts on that, there are many ways for you to do that. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join us in the Babel Conference. That's our closed listeners group. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and it should come right on up. If not, just type the whole name. It is a closed group, so if you're not yet a member, please answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You can also find us in social media. Our username everywhere is TrekFM, so hit us up on Twitter, Instagram, wherever you want, and we'd love to hear from you there. And of course, you can send Matthew and me email by going to our website at trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose the orb, and that'll come to Matthew and me by email. And we'd love to hear your thoughts. And if you have the option in your podcast app of choice to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not drinking coffee in the afternoon, where can people find you?
Well, I guess that means I'm going to be up late, but you can find me on social media under the name MattRushing02, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, Vero, all of those places. You can find me here on the network, of course, with the 602 Club, our other side of the network, where we talk about all those other fandoms since there's so many. And, you know, we talk a lot of Star Trek, so we got to get in the We got to give equal time to the other things. You can also find me doing, of course, Warp 5 with you, Chris, as we talk about Enterprise, especially as we're walking through every single episode for its 20th anniversary, and doing Literary Treks about the books and the comics of Star Trek. And then over on the Nerd Party Network, I've got Owl Post with Drea Kaufman, where we talked about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time. And last but not least, Aggressive Negotiations with the one and only John Mills as we talk about Star Wars and dive into the depths of that series. But now, Chris, when you're not helping, you know, countries decide to disarm their weapons, where can people find you?
Wow, you uncovered my secret career. You know, this whole magazine publishing, podcasting stuff is just a cover for my secret diplomatic career.
It's really what's made it so hard to get orbs in recently. That's what it is.
It is, yeah. I was on assignment for several years, and it was difficult for us to find an opportunity to record. But I'm glad we're recording again now. And so, like you said, in addition to the show, you can find me doing Warp 5 with you, talking about Enterprise for the 20th anniversary. I've also got The Ready Room, which Larry Nemechek and I do from time to time. Literary Treks, Interphase, lots of stuff in the back catalog, always busy sharing my thoughts on Star Trek. And then, of course, I've got my regular work in publishing. And I'd love to talk to you about those things, Star Trek, Japan, whatever. You can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. That's my name throughout social media, but Twitter is where I'm most active. And yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts on any of those things. Now, if you'd like to help us keep this show and everything else we're doing going, we could definitely use your help. The network needs your support. To find out how you can support the network and get involved, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. And we really appreciate everyone who is helping us right now. We could not keep the network going without you. So thank you so much for your support. Well, Matthew, it was interesting to talk about this earlier episode of DS9, a little bit different discussion than some of the ones we have on the Orb, but I enjoyed it and I'm looking forward to the next one.
Me too, Chris, and we will see you next time as we gaze into the Orb.